Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 44. You may have noticed the new intro music. I hope you like it. I think it was time for a little change. Lately, I've been talking with several parents and therapists about preschools and some of the concerns that surround preschools and kids with sensory issues specifically. There aren't just concerns, but some of the discussions are related to the dynamics of therapists and teaching staff working in preschools. I think this is a pretty big topic right now, this time of year, because a lot of kids recently started going to preschool, and I'm mostly talking about the early intervention preschools that, at least in the United States, are part of the education system if a child qualifies for services and has an IEP or individualized education plan. Before I get too far into today's topic, I want to remind you who have a business related to special needs in some way to please get on my community resource directory on my website and advertise your business there. We have a large audience now and a lot of people are checking it out, so get on there and let people find you. Be a resource for people in your area or in the online community. You can get on at mymidwesttherapy.com and click on the community resource tab. Then just click on create a new listing and you'll be set. I still have the price reduced to $30 for 1 year. You can't beat that as a way to advertise your company and build our community of like-minded people. I will read your company information on the show after you sign up. Now, it was back to school time in August, which for some kids meant start a new preschool now that they are 3 years old and have transitioned out of the infant and toddler programs. So everyone at the preschool is starting fresh from a teaching and therapy perspective. Sometimes this means new staff to the school, and sometimes this just means new teachers or therapists fresh out of college, not to mention the new and returning students to the schools. By this time of year, the teachers, therapists, and students have pretty much settled into the schedules and routines. It has also been enough time that parents usually feel like their child's teacher should know their child pretty well by now. And that their child should be starting to show some progress in the classroom as far as following the routines and the expectations of the teachers. It is hard for parents to send their three-year-olds to a preschool, but especially hard for those parents who have kids with high sensory needs, because all they can do is hope that the teachers get them like they do. The problem is that sometimes the teachers don't quite get them, because depending on their education and their experiences with kids, they may not have an understanding of sensory processing. I don't blame teachers for this at all. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong here, but from what I understand, sensory processing is not specifically taught as a class for teachers who are working on getting their teaching degree. My guess is that some of the classes might mention sensory processing and touch on it briefly or generally, but I don't think this is a topic that teachers are expected to know a lot about in order to become teachers. This might have changed since I last checked, so if you know of a university that teaches a sensory processing class to teachers who are getting their degree or certificate, let me know. I definitely want to know about it. Sensory processing is historically an OT topic, and I think we can still claim that as our thing, although I know more and more people who are not OTs that have a good understanding of sensory processing too. But those people will often still look to me or to other OTs they know for the details and the why of things related to the sensory stuff. With all that being said, I also know that there are a lot of teachers out there who actually do know about sensory processing. I want to give those teachers credit for getting it, at least enough to allow for accommodations and exceptions in their classroom when needed. I would guess that teachers in this case either have many years of experience in teaching and working with young children, or they're just interested in learning more about the sensory stuff and have taken it upon themselves to read about it or educate themselves in some way to get a better understanding of it. I know there are a lot of teachers listening to this show right now, and I'm so happy that you are, because you can and will make such a big difference in many kids' lives. I want to thank those of you teachers out there who either understand it, even a little bit, or are willing to be open to the ideas surrounding the sensory strategies and issues. Now, let me come at this first from the perspective of the parents, sending their child with sensory issues to preschool. For this discussion, I'm talking specifically about kids who have been in an early intervention program for 0 to 3 year olds, and now they're 3 years old, and they have transitioned out of the infant and toddler program and have qualified for the early intervention preschool services. This means the school district has determined that this child will benefit from receiving classroom and therapy services. This begins when they turn 3 years old and ends when they start kindergarten. So up to this point, the child and parents have had developmental therapists coming to their home, OTs, PTs, speech, developmental, any one or combination of these may have been working with them. When a parent has these therapists helping them at home, it is a very personal thing. The main thing for this conversation, though, is that the infant and toddler program is focused on helping the parent, educating the parents, and addressing the parents' concerns specifically. I have a lot of families that I work with in the home that get to this point where their child is getting ready to transition to preschool, and the parent gets a little or a lot anxious. There are so many understandable reasons for this from a parent's perspective. It is a big transition not only for the kids, but for the parents as well. Sometimes more so for the parents even. The therapists coming to their home provide a close support network for them, and we are usually pretty accessible because we meet with them directly for visits, and they are able to call us whenever they want to talk about concerns or share success stories that come up between our visits. This changes once their child starts going to preschool. We stop coming to their home, and even though we're still there for moral support whenever they want to talk, it's not the same depth of support as before. The home support network is not the only thing to consider here. The bigger issue is that their child is going to go to a school, and from the parents' perspective, they are left to fend for themselves. Now, I know that is not the actual case, but for parents, it sometimes feels like that. They're used to being their child's advocate, and they know their child better than anyone else. Usually by this time, they have the home setting fairly under control from a sensory perspective, or at least they are understanding it better than they used to, and have some knowledge of how to help their child when they're with them. The preschool setting, without the parent, is a new thing to most of these families. The parent can't be there to preemptively meet their child's sensory needs, or any other needs for that matter. By now, the parents are familiar with their child's sensory needs and what to expect. They know the signs of when they're starting to get overstimulated. They know when their child is going to need to get up and move because they haven't met any vestibular needs lately, and they need to get moving again so they will be able to continue to pay attention to the activities. Some kids will act out by throwing a toy or get up from circle time and run around, or many other examples of things that look like and sometimes are behaviors. However, what parents of kids with sensory processing issues know is that sometimes their child will do something that looks like a behavior at first, but when they go back over the checklist of sensory needs, they can usually figure out what triggered that quote-unquote behavior to happen. There are some times when we can prevent these behaviors from happening, if we know what to expect from kids, and if we know how to get their sensory needs met before they get to that point. For example, let's use the behavior of getting up from circle time and running around. If you don't know what circle time is, it is where the kids sit on the floor in one specific area of the preschool room. The teacher takes this time to go over the days of the week, the weather, the date, they might read a book or sing a song, things like that. This is an activity that is part of the routine or schedule at preschools. It helps the kids learn predictability because it happens every day at school. And they learn to sit and pay attention for a short amount of time, although it seems really long for some kids. They try to answer questions about the calendar or participate in singing the songs and stuff like that. The child who gets up from circle time and starts running around seems like he's just acting up and not wanting to do what the teacher asked him to, which is sit down with the other kids. And there are some kids where this is absolutely the case. However, in the situation where the child has sensory processing issues, that is likely not the case. It might be that the child has been at preschool for an hour already, and they have only been playing at the tables or on the floor with stationary toys and games. And now that the teacher wants them to sit still at circle time, their body is not able to do it. This child might have issues with vestibular sensory processing, where they need to get specific and purposeful head movements going before their body will feel calm enough to be able to sit and hopefully pay attention. In this case, they could maybe use a little time in the sensory room on the trampoline or swinging or pushing heavy things across the room. It would be an ideal if the teachers or the paras could do these things with the child for maybe 20 minutes right before circle time. I know that's not always possible, but we're talking about just an ideal situation. After that, the child could come back and be more likely to be able to sit for this activity. Maybe the child has issues with auditory processing, and they've been in the preschool classroom dealing with all the sounds that are usually heard in classrooms, like the other kids talking and playing, the toys making sounds, the teachers talking, the chairs banging around, the air conditioner blowing, whatever else might be going on each day that the child's brain is trying to process. If they're trying to process all of these sounds because they aren't able to block out the unimportant sounds, they could be starting to get overstimulated. This might be making them feel slightly anxious or stressed, and the child probably doesn't recognize these feelings within themselves at this age. So, a behavior happens, and they throw a toy or knock over a chair or bump into another child. Something that looks like they're having a behavior issue, when it is really a result of their sensory system getting overwhelmed, and this is the reaction that often happens. Their body literally feels the need to react by pushing or using force on something as a type of release or a way of getting proprioceptive or deep pressure input. It could also just be the simple reaction of, I don't know what else to do because I'm starting to freak out, so it just happens. Again, we want to recognize these symptoms before the child gets to this point of being so overstimulated that they act out. And parents know what this looks like before it happens and are pretty good at recognizing it. This makes it stressful for parents sending their child to preschool because they know it has taken them years to figure this out, and they worry that the teacher won't be able to recognize the symptoms before it gets to the point of acting out. Since the teacher doesn't know their child, especially at the beginning of the year, and maybe the teacher doesn't understand the sensory piece of things, so they will just chalk all of it up to a behavioral issue. Parents know that these instances are not behaviorally based, and it is not fair for the teacher to treat their child as if it is all behavior related and not address the sensory part at the same time. Now, in this example, I don't think the teacher is trying to be unfair. I'm just assuming in this specific example that they don't have an understanding of sensory processing. Now, let's talk about these same examples from the teacher's perspective. This may help those parents listening today have some idea of what the teachers and the teaching staff overall may be going through as well. In addition to the main classroom teacher, there may be some other people helping out. There may be paraprofessionals or paras, teaching aides, and sometimes therapists like OTs, PTs, and speech therapists are in the room for short periods of time. Generally speaking, paras are assigned to be helping one specific child, but I'm sure there are exceptions to this. This is predetermined based on their IEP, or their plan that is written during the school year, which has the goals that each child is working on for that year. The main teacher is ultimately responsible for the class as a whole, and they are supposed to remember everything about everyone all the time. Now, thinking about the circle time example, the teacher and the teaching staff are trying to wrangle all of the kids over to the area to start circle time. Now, not only are they trying to get all the kids to come over and sit down, but then once they're there, they're trying to help them pay attention and actually hopefully learn something while they're sitting there before they want to get up again, too. The one child from the earlier examples who either had vestibular or auditory sensory processing issues or any other option of sensory issues that I actually didn't get into for this example, maybe they were sitting for a hot second, but now they're up and running around the room. The main teacher is seeing the child run around and not responding when they call the child to come sit back down. And the child is overall resistive to coming back to circle time for whatever their reasons are. The teacher may or may not have been specifically watching this child for signs of sensory overstimulation prior to circle time. At this point, the teacher is seeing the child not following directions, If the teacher has an understanding of sensory processing, they will try to use the strategies they know to help this child to be able to join them for circle time. Maybe it's a weighted lap pad or blanket to hold or wear on their body while sitting in the circle. Maybe it's a fidget toy or their chewy tube or a balance disc or wiggle seat where they can sit and wiggle at the same time, or a beanbag chair for deep pressure, which can be calming for their body. And if none of those strategies are working, the teacher may ask one of the other adults to take the child out of the room for a few minutes. They could walk down the hall or go to the sensory room, if there is one, to try some additional calming strategies outside of the classroom environment temporarily. The teacher or the teaching staff may try to redirect the child verbally to come sit at circle time. They may try other behavioral strategies with reinforcers or other things like that to encourage the child to sit with the group. The thing about all of this is that we have only been focusing on one child. There is not just one child in the class, and there may be several other kids who are doing the same or similar things as the one that we have been talking about. For those parents out there who have one child with sensory processing issues, you know it can be difficult to try and stay on top of it all and keep your child from getting to the point of overstimulation and freakout time. Now imagine if you had four or five more kids with sensory issues and their sensory issues were all different. The teachers may be dealing with that at the preschool. So for teachers who may understand sensory processing to some degree, they are trying their best to help each child, but of course it won't always happen perfectly. If the teacher doesn't know about sensory processing, they will most likely only see them as behaviors, and this can be difficult for everyone involved, because using behavioral strategies without addressing the sensory needs probably won't be very effective, at least not as effective as when you're able to address both things. It could be tempting for teachers to want to take the whole class into the sensory room and let the kids burn some energy. But that's not really what the sensory room is for. It is supposed to be for those kiddos that really need the time to focus on getting specific sensory needs met. That might be intense movement activities, or a quiet time, maybe listening to music and headphones, or whatever it is that fits their needs and helps them decompress, or have some time away from the other stimulation, or lack of stimulation. This important time will help them reset and be able to go back to the classroom, and hopefully their body will be more prepared for listening and learning. The occupational therapist in the school is an important factor with these kids. The OT can and should be giving the teacher specific activities for each child that has sensory issues. The OT can come up with a basic sensory plan for each child that they work with and find some way to get that information to the teacher so they can use it in their classroom. Ideally, finding some easy checklist or short list of ideas for each child that can be hanging in their cubby or somewhere easy to see, so the teachers and the parents can reference those throughout the school day. The plans should have some information about what the signs are or might be for that child to indicate when they are getting overstimulated, or just the opposite, when they are not getting enough stimulation like movement activities. And they should list things like when to take them to the sensory room and what to do with them while they are there. Also things for the child to use in the classroom to keep them from getting to the point of overstimulation. And tools to use during times like circle time. Also what to do with them if they get to the point of overstimulation and how to help them come back down. I think most of us understand that there is an ideal of what we want to have happen, and then there is the reality of what we're able to do. That is very true in these cases, because even when everyone involved fully understands the situation and everything is in place, it doesn't always go as we plan. This is a reality not only at preschools, but at home and in the other environment. So I hope the show today has given you some possible insight into all the perspectives surrounding preschools. And I'm sure I missed about a million other examples and scenarios and perspectives, but in keeping it general, I hope it is helpful for some of you. And if you can try to be open and listen to the other sides of the story, I know we all just want what is best for all of the kids in this setting. Please try to work as a team as much as possible. One final thing for today, I want to reach out to those of you listening who are parents of a child with special needs. If you would be interested in coming on the show and talking about your experiences as a parent and sharing information for other parents and for therapists who might want to hear about things from your perspective, send me an email and let me know what you would like to possibly talk about. My email is allison@mymidwesttherapy.com, and you can find all of my information in the show notes for all of my shows. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.